Hey, it's Tony Bruschi. If you enjoy this podcast, Real Ghost Stories Online, be sure to check out our other paranormal podcast, The Grave Talks, with new episodes every Monday and Tuesday. Just search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts. Now, here's a 15-minute preview of one of this week's episodes of The Grave Talks. Today on The Grave Talks, Lure of the Malvern Manor. Malvern Manor has become one of the most well-known haunted destinations in the United States. Initially opened as a hotel at the turn of the century, it was converted into a nursing facility and eventually a group home. As time would pass, it would eventually fall into disrepair, with only the spirits of the past residing behind its walls. Today, the Malvern Manor is home to many souls, some with various personalities, some with a dark history of murder, innocent children who left the world too early, and many more. Today, we hear about what life is like at the Malvern Manor with Josh Hurd.
It's kind of interesting, like the building itself has kind of worn many different hats, right? We do know that the building itself was constructed in the mid-1800s. Its primary function was a hotel, which was also primarily servicing the railroad at that time. So people coming and going all the time. It was very interesting. Now, we know it ran as a hotel all the way up until the 1950s, so it had a pretty good run there. Yeah. After that, it kind of takes an odd turn, and it becomes what we would consider today to be a nursing home type of setting. And then the nursing home itself, it didn't last very long. In the 1970s, the state of Iowa came in and they shut them down. The hallways weren't wide enough to support transporting patients properly. And so they shut them down. Now, this is where history becomes the most fascinating, kind of for geeks and nerds like myself. And that is where it becomes the group home. Now, the group home itself is servicing any type of mental disorder you could possibly imagine. And now these are things that in the 70s were considered more mental issues than they are today, I should kind of preface with saying. But it's things that we see every day. People with drug and alcohol abuse, people with Down syndrome. All the way to the opposite side of the coin, where you have people with multiple personalities, or DID, as we refer to it these days. Schizophrenics, even murderers, are housed here. This is a very odd population of people coexisting under the same roof. And then it ran as such all the way up until 2005, when it was eventually then shut down for a laundry list of reasons why.
Yeah.
So, yeah, very interesting history for sure with the building.
Let's go back to its initial days of when it was a hotel, from its inception all the way up into the 1950s. What kind of hotel was this? What were some? Are there any stories of its day? Any events that took place there? Paint the picture of what this was like.
The building itself was very multi-purpose back in those days. Once you walked into the front door of this building, you're greeted in this very large wooden room. And that kind of served as the lobby, but it also served as kind of a gentleman's parlor where the guys would sit around. They would sip their whiskey, smoke their stogies, talk about whatever business they were on. Obviously, the majority of people were just traveling businessmen of some sort. But like I said, weddings have been held in that same room. Funerals have been held in that same room. They used to, back in the day as well, like back in the spiritualist movement of the 19-teens, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They would get together and they would, once a month they would do like seances. They would also use that building once a month as well. There was two doctors that would come into town and they, would line up. They would line up and get checked out and see if everybody was healthy or whatever. I mean, it's a very multi-purpose building, but also kind of the hub of that whole town, that whole area. Very, very cool place.
It's just amazing to think about, obviously different place, different time, where some of these practices, you go and say, well, that's rather bizarre that they're doing it this way or that way. But some of these things were more so the norm at one point in time.
Very much so. Yeah. Especially back then, and we look at the medical practices back then and we think it's fairly crude. Well, in 100 years, I'm sure they'll say the same about us.
Sure.
But it's interesting, though. It's very interesting.
It very much is. When it was converted into a nursing home facility that ran from the 50s all the way into the 70s, what was life like at the facility from that time window that we know about?
From everything that I've gathered, as far as like talking to the majority of the information that I get from that time period is talking with family members who had family inside of that facility, mm-hmm. right? And I've also talked to former staff members and all that, but it seemed like it was very, very generic, you know, like very standard nursing home type setting. Mm-hmm. Visitors coming and going all the time to come see their loved ones and visit and all of that. But I mean, it was just kind of life and life as usual, I guess, sure. you know, until the state came in. And of course, at this time, you know, in the 70s, like all of these new implementations are coming into fruition. And of course, you know, the hallway width obviously was one of those issues. And so, I mean, that was enough to shut them down, which is kind of crazy.
It wasn't shut down because of any sort of malpractice or anything. It was strictly like a zoning type issue.
Correct. Yeah, which is super weird. And it wasn't until then when it did convert over to the group home, as I like to call it. Mm-hmm. There was a lady who actually worked at this building while it was functioning as the nursing home. Mm-hmm. And her name was Geraldine. Now, Geraldine also then, kind of like I said, she kind of started working there while it was running as the nursing home. But then when it actually converted to this group home, she became the owner of this building and she took over. She loved this place so much, in fact, that there is a trailer that sits directly behind Malvern Manor, just by 5 feet. And that was her home. She loved this place so much. She put her home right up next to it so she could be there if need be, you know, at just the drop of a hat, she could be there. Now, sadly, she was forced into retirement. She was, I believe, she was 87 years old when she was kind of forced into retirement, which is crazy to think about, that she was still plugging away and working at that age. And she didn't go quietly, you know, she didn't really want to retire. But the gentleman that took over after her leaving, he was not very well liked. He wasn't very well liked by the community members. He wasn't very well liked by the staff or the residents either. He was very verbally abusive, sometimes physically abusive as well. He is the reason basically why everything shut down ultimately in 2005. Like the last inspection that the building itself had was February 15th of 2005, and there was no heat in the building. Now, mid-February in Iowa is fairly chilly. And so I can't even imagine the living conditions, you know, and that was just one thing. There was also a ton of, insurance fraud and all that fun stuff kind of going on underneath the and behind the surface, which obviously came out in the wash after this guy was arrested.
Yeah.
So there was a lot of stuff that was going on, but ultimately he was the demise of the building itself.
So really, would you say for the most part, up until the end, when it came under this mismanagement, it was a fairly calm run of the building,
for the most part, yes. Like it is interesting looking back through history. We can also see that back in like 1910, for an example, late 1910, there was an outbreak of diphtheria, which very similar to today, a lot of people had to be quarantined and all of that, which a lot of people were quarantined to that building. However, diphtheria is quite aggressive. And it was taking their lives. I mean, they would be, you know, diagnosed and then dead within hours. It's not like what we're seeing today, obviously, with a incubation period of 2 weeks and you're just walking around like it's fine. But it is interesting. It's almost as if like the spirits of the building know what's going on. Activity has ramped up. Now, it's kind of a sad thing because we're obviously not seeing a lot of people these days.
Sure.
As far as guests and all of that. However, like, the activity has been ridiculous. Me being over there by myself sometimes gets a little terrifying. So,
and we'll talk about that. I want to get to kind of how things have changed and what may be activity with our current status of what things are going on here in the year 2020. And I like to timestamp everything too, because people listen to our show 10 years from now, they'll be like, what do you mean? What's going on today? Go back.
What do you mean? There's a pandemic?
Yeah, go back to spring of 2020 when all the fun began. Well, it's so interesting. So the house itself, although it may not, it is, some would think in some cases where you have it being a nursing facility of some type or, you know, the asylums of the world and all of that. A lot of times you talk about places with real rough, tragic, long-term histories. For the most part, there were people who certainly died on this property, but it may not be the uber dark history that that some places would hold. So after this place shuts itself down or gets shut down in 2005, what goes on with the property? Does it just sit? Does someone else step in? What goes on between that point and more into current day?
So the property itself then kind of, just fell into disuse for the most part. Now, there was a family that tried to, they lived inside of this building. Now, they only used a certain portion of it, but it didn't last very long, only just a matter of 6 months or so. And then it was bought by this gentleman. His name was Quincy. Now, Quincy had these, you know, grand plans that he wanted to turn the building back into kind of what it used to be as like a hotel. Well, Malvern, Iowa isn't necessarily like a destination, you know, so to speak. And so that he kind of realized that, number one, it was going to cost so much money to do. And number two, it might not be a good business venture for him as well. So the building just kind of sat there. Now, he lived just next door. And interestingly enough, it was him that I met. I was in Malvern, Iowa. I was filming one of my first documentary films that I ever did. And we were shooting at this place. It's called the Classic Cafe. And they have their own slew of paranormal happenings. Well, there's also a bar that's attached to the Classic Cafe. And because of noise contamination and all of that, we really couldn't investigate properly anyway. I went outside and met this gentleman who was like, hey, dude, what's with all the cameras? You know? Yeah. And I'm like, well, this is where I lose a lot of people. So I'm going to tell him, and he's either going to think this is really cool or think I'm a crackpot. But interestingly enough, like, him and I got to talking, and he's like, oh, I own this place. It's kind of weird and creepy. And, you know, it used to be this, that, and the other. Kind of went through the general history of it. He goes, the place is like 10,000 square feet. He goes, and I don't really believe in this stuff, but there's certainly things that happen that I can't explain away. I'm like, where is this place? And he goes, well, it's just right there across the street. And I'm like, I think we just became best friends. And so he was nice enough to say, yeah, come on in and investigate and do your thing. And I fell in love with the place. From that point on, I was hooked. I kind of let him know. I was like, I don't think you quite realize what you have here. Like, we had experienced more in the first 2 hours of walking in the door than we had in the last 2 years of investigating. And this was something special. And I kind of convinced him to open the doors to the paranormal community. I would give the tours. I would take the money, which at that time was just cash only, you know, and I would run it right next door to him at his house. We did that for like 6 months. And then he called me and was like, hey, man, I got a new job. I have to leave. I'm selling my house. I'm going to sell the manor, all of that. Mm-hmm. I was like, give me 3 weeks, you know, just please pump the brakes for a second. And luckily enough, you know, we were able to get in there and we were able to let the building continue to do what it was doing, you know, because mm-hmm. we were just now starting to break the surface, especially with some of this history, and getting to understand the antecedent of a haunting, you know, what merits a haunting, right?
Yeah.
It's very interesting stuff, and I wanted to continue that work.
Hope you enjoyed this 15-minute preview of one of this week's two brand new episodes of The Grave Talks. To hear the rest and get new episodes every Monday and Tuesday right in your podcast feed, search The Grave Talks wherever you download podcasts and press subscribe or visit thegravetalks.com.